1.
I'm Austin bound, get my feelings checked at the door.
That's right, Texas has its own community-run Linux Fest on April 10th, 2010 in Austin, Texas. Go to texaslinuxfest.org for details, and remember, get your Linux on.
I'm Austin bound, get my eyes set on the price. The time is...
Psst, oi! Over here! Do you want to buy this? It's the center of the open source universe. Picked it up last year in Wolverhampton. Only one careful owner. It's a bargain. Oi! Oi, come back! Oh. I'm gonna have to find something to do with this. Hold on a minute. Yes, that's right. On the 1st and 2nd of May this year, Liverpool is the only place to be for anyone interested in free software, free culture, and free thinking. It's the second live OggCamp event, organised by Linux Outlaws and the Ubuntu UK podcast. We've taken the mantle from Lug Radio Live, and we're not giving it back. The 1st and 2nd of May 2010 at the Blackie, Liverpool. Visit ogcamp.org for more details. Also join us on Friday, April 30th for a special free culture gig. Kick off the weekend in style with some great live music. But you might want to leave your hubcaps at home.
Join us for the 2010 Southeast Linux Fest as we once again celebrate Linux and open source software in the GNU/South. Due to the overwhelming response last year, this year's event will be bigger, better, and longer. SELF 2010 will take place Friday, June 11th through Sunday, June 13th at the Spartanburg Marriott at Renaissance Park in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Be there for UbuCon, Fedora Activity Day, BSDA certification, Drupal Camp, multiple parties featuring Dual Core as well as the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 as Riff Tracks, and an even more expansive group of superb speakers, sponsors, and exhibitors. SELF is free to attend, but hurry and register today to lock in the special discount room rate at the hotel. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
1, 2, 3,
it's a Linux and Tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a link it bad. For the stream link, go direct to dlngs.org. And the IC channel is a linuxlink.net bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome, welcome.
Uncool, man. My cat just came right over here and peed on the floor next to me. Can you believe that?
That's not funny.
Yes, I can.
Oh, sounds like Joel.
Hey, your animals have done other things.
What the heck? Fresh, clean kitty litter.
We're going to have a problem here. Anyway, what is cool is we have two wonderful guests.
We've got Leslie Hawthorne and Carol Smith from Google. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Summer of Code.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having us.
Welcome, welcome.
Good evening, all.
They're going to find us a sound engineer over the Summer of Code.
No, they need to have a project to work on Pulse Audio.
Yeah. That, step one, remove Pulse Audio.
Ay, ay, ay. So how you guys doing?
We're good. I'm actually on my way to go to a ski trip tomorrow, which should be fun. So I'm working twice as hard as I usually do, which is pretty darn hard, let me tell you. So I've hit the slopes. It's a beautiful thing.
Now, obviously, I mean, you do more than the Summer of Code for Google, right? Or is that a
absolutely. I mean, I also work on maintaining the Google Open Source blog and other student programs related to open source, like our high school program, which we haven't put on for 2 years, but hopefully it'll happen this year. which is sort of a Summer of Code-like program for folks who are pre-university. And Carol pretty much does everything.
Yeah, I'm an engineering project manager up in the San Francisco office, and I run a whole bunch of different events and things up here for engineering culture in general.
You hosted Joseph Stiglitz yesterday.
Yeah, we hosted Joseph Stiglitz yesterday here in the office, which was great. He is an amazing, amazing man.
So they obviously have enough work. I mean, Google's a fairly small company, right?
Yeah.
They got
there's only like four of us.
Two
yeah,
irons in the fire.
Right. Now.
Right.
You know what? Before we get too far off topic, for those five or six people out there who don't know what the Google Summer of Code is, perhaps you can inform them so that they already know.
I heard
about it.
We're doing really, really well with our marketing efforts. Would you like the super short version or the short version?
Go ahead with the short version. It'll take up some time and really
excellent.
Educate our listeners.
So the Google Summer of Code program originated in 2005, and the genesis of the program was that one of our co-founders, Larry Page, was thinking, hey, how do we solve the age-old problem of the fact that students work really, really hard during the regular school year, and in this particular instance, he was thinking about computer science students and students in the engineering discipline. And they work very, very hard, and they write cool code, and then all of a sudden, it's summertime, and they head out, and they atrophy on all those wonderful skills that they learn because they're not necessarily working in a technical field, right? They could be, doing what I did when I was in college to pay the bills. You know, they could be delivering pizzas, right? And it's great to have pizza, as we all know, but that certainly doesn't help you be all you can be in terms of being a computer scientist. So Larry told a few people that he thought that Google could help solve this problem. And lo and behold, my boss, Chris Bona, and a few other folks came up with the concept of the Google Summer of Code program. And the idea here was it would be wonderful to give students the opportunity to work in technical fields. So how do you do that if you can't offer every bright individual an internship at a big company? Well, the idea there was, hey, open source projects need new contributors. Students need jobs. Open source projects have experienced developers on staff, in air quotes. Why not pair up talented students with mentors from open source projects and have Google play matchmaker and provide funding to those students while they work on an open source project during their summer holidays? So the program launched, and now to date we've got, you know, more than 3,400 students who have gone through the program and successfully completed a 3-month coding project during their summer holidays. It's a worldwide program, and by our internal estimates, we produce millions of lines of code. So it's been a really cool experience.
Sounds like an awesome experience. I mean, it from what I've read about it and heard about it, it sounds like you guys have really some major success on different open source projects over the years.
Right, and I think that's the thing that's most amazing to me, just in my experience with the program, has been the incredible enthusiasm that I've seen from the community just based on the results that they've seen happen for their code base, happen for just development in general. Like, there is so much energy and enthusiasm in the open source community around Summer of Code. And I hear time and again folks from various projects say, you know, Summer of Code is what gets us organized. We actually really start to think about what kind of improvements need to be made in our code base or what research projects we could do if we just have the time because of Summer of Code, right? And so when each project applies to be a mentoring organization for Summer of Code, they're asked to provide a list of ideas that students can work on as part of the program. And that is such an area that allows people to focus on what can really be done to make their project better. And I think a lot of folks sort of rely on Summer of Code to be the drumbeat throughout the year to sort of push their development cycle along. If not just because they have sort of fresh blood coming in and writing code, but also just because it's a timeline for them to work around, because they know, hey, every year around February, March-ish, Google's going to say, hey, do you want to apply for Summer of Code? And so what kind of ideas can we generate in order to be a part of that?
So how many applicants do you usually get, and how many are selected for the coders and for the projects?
Sure. So last year we got around 400 applications from different open source projects, and we selected 150 to work with. I expect the number of projects to apply to be about the same, maybe a little bit more this year. And we're choosing again this year to work with 150 open source projects. We think that's kind of the sweet spot from an administrative perspective. And then in terms of the number of students, we had about 4,000 applicants last year, and we accepted around 1,000 students. And we're going to, again, accept 1,000 students into the program this year. Again, we felt that was the real sweet spot numbers-wise. And one thing, if I can just throw off a tangential remark here, I hear from a lot of students that they would love to take part in Summer of Code, but they've heard it's so competitive, and they heard that it's really difficult to get in, and so they're too intimidated to apply. They're afraid they won't be accepted, and I really just wanted to say to folks that that is not a good reason to not sort of reach out and try and apply for Summer of Code. Traditional grant programs accept, you know, less than 10% of the applicants, and in some cases it's as low as 3% of the applicants, whereas for Summer of Code we're looking at about 25% of the applicants. So yes, it is a competitive program. Yes, it is a merit-based program. Yes, it is prestigious to be a participant, but that shouldn't stop anyone from trying it out. Some projects even specifically look for folks who have no open source experience whatsoever, because they want to give a young person an opportunity to get to know what open source is all about.
So 1 in 4 chance is pretty high. I mean, you got a good chance.
It is pretty darn good, actually. And keep in mind, too, that we had several more applications than that. We had about 7,000 applications, but students are permitted to apply to more than one open source organization, and they're also permitted to submit more than one application to each organization, because we basically say to students, you can apply up to 20 times, either all to the same project or to many different projects, because we know that open source projects share coders, they share code, and we want students to have a wide variety of opportunities to participate in the program.
So let me ask you, for the projects that are looking for coders, who decides which projects get selected? And what's the criteria?
So Google goes through an initial vetting process where we choose the mentoring organizations that will participate each year. And then after that, students are asked to apply to the program. They've got a little over a week to do that. And after that, the mentoring organizations themselves, and basically the mentors for that particular project, and that's almost always composed of the core developers and other community members who are really excited and passionate about seeing Summer of Code happen for their particular community, go through and review all of the applications and do further interviewing of the applicants, either via email, sometimes it's by phone, sometimes it's by IRC, and get a little bit more detail from each individual about what their interests are, why they'd like to participate in the program, etc. And then each project basically tells Google, if you're going to fund 10 students to work on our project, these are the 10 students that we'd like to work with. And as I said, Google really plays matchmaker. We don't make the decision about which project should happen or which students should be accepted. And that's because we know that our partners in the open source community really know what their project needs, both in terms of personality and code, right? So we're there to provide the funding, we're there to give guidance about good community relations, but really it's completely up to the project to decide what's going to work best for them.
So let me ask you, do the projects that are considered infrastructure, do they have a higher priority because, you know, their components are pushed downstream and more people get the benefit from it? Or is it, applications? Or is it, strictly individual, you go case by case?
You know, I'd say that we select which organizations will participate much more on sort of a case-by-case basis. In some cases, we are excited to see a particular project participate in Summer of Code because we ourselves use the software. And I don't just mean things like we ourselves, as in Google, makes use of a particular code base. Like, for example, the Linux Foundation has been a participant for the last couple of years, and it's certainly no secret that Google uses Linux, right? But it's also software that we, as in the open source team, or we, as in folks at Google that we know well who are open source fans, make use of. If your particular software, like let's say your video player software, not that I'm showing any prejudices there, hopefully, it's something that we use every day, and it makes our lives better, then we're going to be really excited to see that funded and improved, right? And then in terms of which types of projects we accept, from infrastructure to web development to development tool chain, it's really just a matter of what we have heard is useful, what we feel personally is useful, and sometimes it's just something that sounds really, really cool and we want to help. For example, last year one of the projects that we worked with was the MIFOS project, which was a microfinancing software code base, and it's put out by the Grameen Foundation in the United States. And basically, MIFOS is the software that they use to run their entire micro-lending strategy in India in particular, but, you know, in many other parts of the developing world. And I just, you know, we just took a look at that and thought, this is really cool. This is a cool project, and what's even more cool is that they're taking the infrastructure that they've created to do micro-lending and making it available to the whole world. So, you know, hey, it's cool. We want to help out. Certainly have never used it, but definitely a mission that we could believe in.
Now, as far as the coders themselves, what skill set and experience levels are you looking for?
Right, so that's a really broad question. Just because we've got 150 mentoring organizations, and they're anything from Linux distributions to programming languages to content management systems to integrated development environments. So the particular skill set that any one developer is going to need is incredibly varied. Our only hard and fast requirement is that you have to be age 18 as of April 26, 2010, and you have to be a student at an accredited learning institution. So typically we see folks who are working through to get their bachelor's degree, their first undergraduate degree. But in terms of the backgrounds for people, I mean, we have got folks from all walks of life. Most folks are computer science students. And surprisingly enough, well, I should say completely unsurprisingly, if you have a student who's really excited about, say, you know, C while they're, you know, doing their university courses, you'll probably find them working on some kind of deep, dark magic like the Linux kernel or compiler stuff like around GCC, right? Some folks at university are studying more web development tools and things of that nature, and usually those folks find themselves a great home working on, say, the PHP project or one of the content management system projects out there. So also just in terms of experience level, some projects specifically go out of their way to find folks who've never worked on open source before and who may be even in their first year of college. Some projects ask that folks have a lot more experience in terms of how much programming they've done and how many courses that they've taken. So it's my best advice to would-be students is if they see a project or an area that really interests them, go out and start talking to that project, right? Idle in their IRC channel, subscribe to their mailing list, and, you know, talk about your ideas or what you think would be cool to help with and see what, you know, what the reactions from the community are. The best way to make yourself look like a good candidate for Summer of Code is to be visible in the community. So, you know, go out and find out what people are really looking for and see if you're a good match for that. And if not, maybe they have some good advice about another place where you can contribute your time.
Now, let me ask you, do you ever have projects that get assigned more than one person to them? Or is it strictly just one only for each?
I understand the question to mean, do we ever have, like, cases where both students say, I would like to implement this widget for Project Foo. And we do have that. It's not frequent, but it does happen sometimes that two students will both try to do a different implementation of the widget for Project Foo. And that's okay. A little duplication is kind of the way it goes in open source. We certainly don't mind that. But it doesn't happen very frequently.
You know, I was listening to your talk, your session on Lotta Linux Links podcast the other day, which was great. And you know what I thought to myself? Google Summer of Code.
Did you talk too fast?
No. Google Summer of Code is great. But you know what you guys could do next? The Google
what?
Year of Documentation.
Oh my gosh, this has totally come up before. So, at one point we talked about the Google Winter of Documentation, you know, because it was way cooler than the Winter of Discontent, but we were discontented with the state of documentation. And one of the problems is that we are a very small group of folks working to make this program happen every year, so it's myself. Carol is learning the Summer of Code love, and we love her for that. Then there's Kat Allman, Ellen Coe, and then our Uber manager, Chris DeBona. And really, you know, it's maybe a third of us is assigned to do this program at any given time. So it's really, really hard to make other initiatives happen out of our office. And, you know, speaking as someone who writes documentation poorly, I might add, but who writes documentation for this program and for a couple of other areas, I greatly, greatly respect the value of documentation. Everyone on the team does, but it's just not something where we've been able to lend a hand just due to a lack of resources. So it's a question of, hey, can we put our human resources for this towards getting some documentation written, or can we put it toward getting code written? And overall, we felt like people could benefit more from source code getting released than they could benefit from getting documentation out there. Now, that being said, if I may put in a plug for our high school initiative, the Google Highly Open Participation Contest, which we put on back in 2007, documentation was a category where high school students were invited to help contribute to open source projects, and there was just an absolute avalanche of documentation that came in from high school students contributing to open source projects, because a lot of folks who felt maybe intimidated by writing code or fixing bugs were just all over improving the doc. So, like I said, we're hoping to see that effort happen again this year. And for folks who are excited about working on documentation or seeing Google help out documentation efforts, that is a great place to keep your eye out.
And a follow-up to Dan's question is, how about a Google Summer of User Interface and Artwork?
Now, is a great idea. I will go back to pointing out the not enough hands to do all the great work, but there is something each year called the Season of Usability. This is a program that was inspired by the Google Summer of Code, and again, it's the idea that you pair a mentor who has experience in the field of user interaction and design with a student who's studying human-computer interaction or user interface design. And then they go ahead and work on making FOSS tools more usable for those of us who are not uber-amazing command-line geniuses, which would be me. So each year, the Season of Usability, they funded, I want to say they funded 10 students last year. It was certainly 8 students the first year. Celeste Lynn Paul from the KDE project and Ellen Wright-Mayer were the folks who were sort of spearheading putting it together last year. It's through the Open Usability Project, which you can find out more about at openusability.org. And Google has funded that project every year that it's happened. And it's pretty cool because we see all these different Summer of Code-like programs that happen in the community. Everything from the Season of Usability to the New Zealand Summer of Code to... there's a lot, actually, now that I think about it. But we actually provide funding and sponsorship to those programs because we want to see the Summer of Code model spread. It's tried, it's true, it works really, really well. And, you know, clearly there's only so much that we can handle, you know, as the Google Open Source team with a limited number of human resources. So we're happy to provide funding when other folks in the community want to take that model and run with it and do cool stuff with it.
That sounds cool.
I mean, the project is pretty prestigious. You talk to people, and this, you know, and they hear that someone was involved in the Summer of Code. It looks good on their resume. You know, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I think people are really more excited about the T-shirt, but yes, it is definitely seen in the industry as a hallmark of, an indicator of good future performance. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the structure of the program itself in a very basic, fundamental way that may seem a little counterintuitive at first, but when you're a student studying computer science or when you're a student tech studying any subject at a college or university, you're doing a lot of work either completely independently, or maybe if you're in a lab situation or doing group work, you work with two or three other people, sometimes up to four or five. I think the largest group I ever did a group project with in university was 10 people. You work really, really hard together for a couple of weeks to produce something, and after you've produced it, you receive a grade, and that's it, right? There's no sense of maintaining something throughout its life cycle.
Yeah.
There's no need to use things like in the software world, like version controls, right? Why would you use version control if there's only three or four of you? Or why would you need to worry about how to behave properly on a mailing list when there's only three or four of you? Why would you have to worry about fixing the bugs that you've introduced into your software if you've submitted your code and you've gotten a grade and there are some parts of it that are broken, if it's not part of your assignment to go through and refactor and improve the code that you've created? You don't get used to those kinds of tasks. And yet, that's absolutely fundamental to being a software engineer, to being an engineering professional once you get out of college. And to participate in an open source project, you do all of those things.
Yep.
And better still, you not only get the technical exposure, right, to things like using source control or various things in the tool chain, like using an integrated development environment, et cetera, but you get exposure to what it's like to work with a distributed team. I mean, how many folks do you know who are working in the engineering profession and a part of their team is in Sweden and a part of their team is in Brazil and a part of their team is in India and a part of their team is in China and, a part of their team is in, Washington, D.C. and they sit in San Francisco and needing to deal with things like communicating across cultural barriers, communicating across language barriers, communicating and working effectively with folks who are in other time zones. Those are all areas where you get exposure when working on an open source project, and that kind of experience is just invaluable to a future employer.
Absolutely. Now, there's another project, I don't know if you're associated with it, that Google does, but the Android Developer Challenge, I know there's been two of those. Is there a third one coming, if you can answer that? I don't know if you can or not.
You know what? I'm going to be totally honest with you. One, I don't think I could answer that question because it would be a no-no to answer it. But I will answer honestly that I don't know. But I will say that the Android Developer Challenge was really darn popular for the first one and the second one. So it stands to reason to me that there would be more. But I don't have any really good data on that to share with you, gentlemen.
Okay.
Leslie, question.
Yes, sir.
The Google Summer Code obviously is a boon for students to keep their skills fresh and to branch out, and a benefit to companies to be able to provide a mentoring service and maybe even get a potential future employer. I was just curious if you ever hear back from companies or people that were involved and say, one of the really biggest benefits we received from the Google Summer Code is it's kind of forced us to look at our practices and be sure that we're supporting the best practices out there and living up to the higher standards that would that most programmers and companies like that should live by, like documentation and source control and everything.
Sure. So I think what we hear repeatedly from all kinds of different open source projects that participate is that Summer of Code makes them more organized around things like their development cycle and their roadmap. Asking new people to come in and contribute is really, really difficult when what you want to get done lives in the heads of the four or five core developers, all of whom are totally mind-melded already and can finish each other's sentences. And something like the Summer of Code, especially when you're aware from the get-go, because the structure of the program is that it is to appeal to students, people who are still learning. And in fact, their focus of their life currently is learning more about computer science and engineering. You know, when you want to communicate to them what you want to get done, suddenly you're forced to think about what you want to accomplish and a way to articulate that to the outside world in a way that makes sense to far more than just the five of you who are mind-melded. And we hear very consistently from different projects how important it has been to them to help make their communities more welcoming to newcomers, that they've participated in Summer of Code, because they've had students come to them, people who are obviously extremely bright, very competent, and ask them questions where they all sort of stared at each other going, it would never have occurred to me to ask that question because, of course, I already knew the answer. And I think that one of the cool things about Summer of Code is it helps people to sort of open up their perspective and get a chance to have that newbie, that brand new person's eye once again as new folks come into their project and just point out, like, hey, the documentation here sucks. I had a big problem with this area here, and I'd like to improve the documentation while I'm working on this part of my coding project, please. And it has never occurred to the developers on the project that that part of the documentation or that part of the code base could be torturous, because they're totally used to it. And I think that's a huge benefit for open source projects, and I think it's another reason why a lot of folks who have participated in the Summer of Code program are so excited to work with new contributors even far outside of the scope of the program, because that newcomer's eye gives so much valuable information about what is not obvious to, like I said, to the five people who are mind-melded. We cannot all be Vulcans here.
It's great stuff. You guys are doing a great service to the community.
Thank you. I feel really privileged to be a part of this community and be a part of this program. You know, I can't believe they pay me to do this, really. but you know, it's an amazing opportunity, I think, for Google, because it's really a wonderful and cost effective way to enter into a research and development partnership with the entire open source community, right? Google provides funding, and you get the kind of the best and the brightest. Eager folks who are really excited about a particular idea that they are personally passionate about and inspired by, and they get together and they produce, you know, beautiful code that's then made available to everyone to make use of. And that's really, really exciting to me, to be able to enable that passion, that drive, that vision, and to be part of a community that's thousands of members strong, that's, you know, we've had participants now from 90 different countries all over the world. It's just amazing. And if you're, you know, if you're a Summer of Code participant, either a mentor or a student, you know, you'll go to a free or open source software conference and you're wearing your Summer of Code shirt, and suddenly there are two or three other people and you already have somebody to go out and get a coffee with, because you can talk about your experiences in Summer of Code and, you know, and bond over that, and it's kind of a mark of your tribe, and it's really, really exciting and really, really cool. And the number of times I hear from students, like, I finally got to meet my mentor in person at, you know, such and such conference, it was wonderful, it was just, it, you know, it made my year, and it was so wonderful to be able to shake the hand of and thank the person who gave me all of this knowledge and all of this great experience. So, I don't know. Clearly I'm biased, but I think it's pretty darn awesome.
I think it's been successful. I mean, you've had plenty of great projects come through. You've had a lot of people work on all different things, and you know, from what everybody says, it seems to be a positive thing.
Yeah, I think that's something that that I'm pretty excited about for this year. We finally went ahead and increased the payment to our student participants. So basically, like I said, and it's very important for me to emphasize this, I'm sorry if I'm beating a dead horse, but some people don't realize that you get paid as a participant in Summer of Code. They're still like, wait a minute, you get paid? Like, yes, there is money. And like I said, it's a merit-based work-for-hire program, but we went ahead, and for the past 5 years, the student stipend for the three-month project has been $4,500 US dollars, and now that's gone up this year to $5,000 US dollars, so you know, in recognition of inflation and all that other good stuff. So now we're making a bit more money available to our student participants. And, so I think that that's pretty cool. But in general, like, I look back over the last, 5 years that I've been involved, and it's just, the summer lives on, even long after the summer's over, right? People are still writing good code. People are still hanging out with the projects that they worked on before. Even if they're not regularly doing code contributions, a lot of students still hang out on a project mailing list and answer questions, or they idle at IRC and they help point folks in the right direction. And all of that stuff is a contribution that helps to save the time and energy of folks who may be able to work on other parts of the project, like on documentation or bug fixing, right? And I don't think that we're going to see the full benefit of this until like 5 or 10 years from now when, these students who have gone through the summer of code have had the opportunity to work in industry for a few years and bring the ideas that they've learned in open source to their employers. And I think that then we're going to see a real sea change in the way people think about computing and the way they think about the way software is created based on the experience that these students have been having. And I'm really, really excited to see that unfold.
Have you had any participants or from earlier in the program come up to you, later on and say, thank you, or, if it wasn't for this, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing?
Tons. Every time I go to a conference in any part of the world, I inevitably have somebody come up to me and go, oh, wow, you're Leslie, which always freaks me out a little because I'm like, yes, that's me, really. And inevitably it's followed by, thank you so much for Summer of Code. Because of Summer of Code, I now have my dream job at, insert blue chip company name here. Thank you so much for Summer of Code. Because of the skills that I learned, I'm now employed by a small boutique software development shop, and I'm getting paid now to work on the code that I wrote for Summer of Code full-time because it supports our top 5 customers. Or thank you so much for Summer of Code because of my experience with Summer of Code, I knew what I needed to do to start my own startup, and I'm doing a startup focusing on, you name the topic. And it's so incredibly cool, and one of the reasons, too, that I really like working on the Google Open Source blog in my other, wearing my other hat with the team, is the number of success stories that we get to share with folks in the community about amazing stuff that our Summer of Coders do and produce. I don't know, you've been doing some blog posts. Was there anything in particular that you thought was exciting, Carol?
I think the Tor project is just great. I love that they're mentoring students on their project because it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. The Tor folks usually work with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and one of the reasons why I think they're cool, correct me, you should tell me other reasons you think they're cool, but they really do help folks who are, have the potential to honestly be killed for trying to report on human rights abuses in their country. And because they can use Tor, they can get those reports out from behind government censorship and actually get those reports out to the outside world. So we've had the Tor project work with a couple of students, and they may be back this year. Who knows? We cannot make any predictions. But we just put a post on the Google Open Source blog about some of their cool Summer of Code work. Yeah. Google-opensource.blogspot.com. Are you guys still there?
Yeah, we're still here.
You guys dropped out of
there. Yeah, there's a little drop there.
Oh,
I'm sorry, the conference call
lady gave us many instructions about how to change our volume, and I went, that was very weird. But she was very nice about the whole thing for recording. Like I was saying about the Tor project, they're doing a lot of really, really cool stuff, and you can read an update from them about their Summer of Code work at google-opensource.blogspot.com. We also just recently published a report from the R10s project, one from Portland State University. I think we're going to have an update from the XMMS2 guys in the next couple of days. And that's just the stuff I can remember in the last couple of weeks. The nice thing is all the posts on the blog that are about Google Summer of Code are tagged GSOC. So folks who are interested in learning more about the program and especially about the results each year, every year a whole bunch of folks after the program is closed send us wrap-up reports. So if you go to the blog and look for things tagged GSOC, you can get just a ton of information about some of the cool success stories and amazing software that's been written by students who have participated in the program.
Well, let me ask you guys, what are the deadline dates for applicants?
So we are going to pretend that we're not bringing up our computer because our brain no longer functions without the internet. So we begin taking mentoring organization applications on March the 8th, and that closes on that Friday, and I will get you the actual date because, you know, calendars make you happy. So March 12th is the deadline for mentoring organization applications, so that is a very tight window, and we're aware of that. But the nice thing is if you're an organization that wishes to apply to Summer of Code, the application questions may possibly be in our FAQ, so it's pretty easy to get prepared for that narrow time window. And then we start accepting applications from students on March the 18th. Now that's incorrect. On March the 29th, we start accepting applications from students. That's a pretty wide time span, and there's a reason for that. One, we do need a few days to select the participating organizations. So we actually published the list of groups that are going to participate in Summer of Code on March the 18th. And then that time between March 18th and the 29th is to give students an opportunity to talk to their would-be mentors about their ideas before they actually get started applying. We found almost universally that the more time that students had to talk out their ideas and refine their project plans with their mentors before they were under the pressure to actually put something into the web application and hit submit, the better they did. So we're leaving that nice long stretch of time for folks to talk to each other and kind of figure out what they want to do and where they're going. Then on March 29th, we're going to begin to take student applications, and student applications close on April 9th. And then as of April the 26th, we let everybody know which students were accepted into the program, and then we have the community bonding period. Would you like to hear about the community bonding period? It's special and bonding-like.
Yeah, we'd love
sure.
to.
Excellent. It's like an adhesive, but more fun. So the very first couple of years of Summer of Code, we basically said, hey, Summer of Code is happening. Organizations apply. Students apply. Okay, go code. And what we were finding was students really spent the first month or so of the time that they were supposed to be working on their coding project trying to get up to speed on things like documentation and source code and how do I use Git and wait a minute, I haven't used Eclipse before and you know, kind of, you know, basic questions, right? So we instituted the community bonding period where we give students a little over a month. We let them know that they've been accepted into the program, but we give them a little over a month to kind of get up to speed on tools, on documentation. You know, maybe you should read a couple of the research papers in this area before you get started on your coding project so you can think a little bit more about your design plan and what you want to do. So official start of coding this year is on May the 24th. And then we wrap up on August 23rd, which is when we will announce the final results for the year.
All right.
Well, I have to say that the Summer Code Project has really enhanced some of my my favorite products, specifically Neuros Technology and their OSD. I really like that.
For the unenlightened among us, what does OSD stand for?
That's a good question. The Neuros OSD is essentially video recorder. I really don't remember what OSD stands for, but it's basically a video recorder that you attach to your TV, standard definition.
All right. Cool.
For open source device.
Oh well, yeah. There you go. I really couldn't remember.
That's okay. There's so many TLS out there. I'm surprised any of us can remember anything these days.
Yeah, really.
I am.
But I love it. It thanks several of the projects that Joe Bourne and Neuros Technology has had through Google Summer of Code that it is as good a device as it is today. When it first came out, it was okay, but now it's even better, and it's all really all thanks to the Google Summer of Code project.
That's so cool to hear. Like, what about the rest of you? Are there any particular projects that got improved through Summer of Code that you're excited to use every day?
Don't everybody come
okay, apparently here. Not. Well, I'm just going to say that I work VLC, and I'm not really making any kind of... I always feel so bad when I feel like I love this software and they're putting it in Summer of Code, but VLC, were it not for thee, my British comedy could I not watch. And they were improved by Summer of Code and had all sorts of awesome features added, and more British comedy was available for me, and that made me feel really good.
VLC is awesome. It's one of my favorite video audio players that's available on Linux. It's also available on other platforms, too. And those guys are coming out with a video editor, which is definitely an application that could, you know, be improved upon on the Linux platform.
You know. That's awesome.
So, that's definitely one of the best AV apps out there.
I'm so glad to hear that. I know one of the reasons I remain tied to my Mac is some of the video editing tools that are available on it that I have found that I cannot live without because the free software versions don't quite meet my needs. So I'm really excited to hear about that development. That's really, really cool.
Why do you have to ruin such a great interview with that comment? You make us all cry now.
What? You can delete that comment from the podcast, and I will change it to say,
You're a team player, we can tell that.
Oh, yeah, totally. Are you kidding me? Man, I will hum whatever song you want to sort of, you know, excuse me, we have been experiencing technical difficulties.
You can hum the bong, the Mac bong startup, and then, you could do like the the little ditty that they have in their commercial.
We should have
enough.
The didgeridoo music. It would sound a lot better.
You know what? Did you guys have a? Yes. What program? What projects have benefited? Have we seen to a benefit from the Google Summer of Code supporting? And I was just curious, I know I'm over at the Google Summer of Code website, and I'm just curious, is there a list of an easy way to see, like, what projects were a part of the Google Summer of Code? I mean, where
totally.
Would I find...
So, we actually host the workflow application for Summer of Code using an app engine code base that runs on App Engine. Called Melange, which, by the way, is completely open source, so if someone wanted to run their own Summer of Code-like program, which you totally should, you could take the Melange code base and use it to manage your application process and all that good stuff. So the main landing page for Google Summer of Code is code.google.com/SOC for Summer of Code. And on that page, you'll find a link to the Summer of Code 2010 site. And for those who are excited about long URLs, it's socghop.appspot.com. That's the site where we do all the workflow management for all of our student programs. And you will find on that list, on that page, linked a categorized list of mentoring organizations from 2009. And that is a list of all the folks who participated last year.
Yeah, I'm looking at that right now.
And then if you want something that's a little bit more muddled to find, but on the sidebar you'll notice you can expand GSOC 2009, and under that left-hand nav menu there's a list of participating organizations. So just the ones that really stand out for me, looking at them real quick, like the Apache, we've got the Apache project, we've got the Creative Commons folks, we've got Debian, we've got... GCC and GNOME and KDE and you name it, we got it.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at the list here, and there is a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
a little bit of fun for everybody. We're really excited about the fact that we accept so many different types of projects as well, because we want to make sure that the students who participate have the opportunity to work on, you know, a wide range of projects, right? Everything from, and granted, I know Bill Kendrick, so of course I'm going to be biased in this, but, like, the Tux for Kids project, I mean, I think it is so cool that you can have students writing software to get kids excited about using Linux. So, like, Tux Paint and stuff. You know, like, that is just, I mean, that is so cool to me.
Yeah, I was looking at that, too. That is some really good stuff. You know what? What you guys could, here's another program that you can sponsor, because not all of us want to spend our summers working and improving our education. We want to just relax and kick back. So how about a Google Summer of Video Games, where you send us like a video game console or whatever, mm-hmm. hook us up with video mm-hmm. games, and then you can pay us to play video games and eat Doritos.
There you go.
Drink Mountain Dew.
Okay. So this is an excellent concept, and unfortunately it's right in line behind my proposal for the summer of beer, where we all learn how to do Zymergy together, because it's free, and free as in beer. So as soon as they fund that proposal, sir, then I will get right on making sure that everyone gets video game consoles and Doritos, and for those of us who are not Dorito fans, some Fritos.
That's wonderful, too. You could combine the two.
Summer Cheeseburger of beer Doritos. And video game consoles and Doritos and Fritos? I think someone would get injured. I really do.
Works for me.
And, yeah. And I'm sure, you know, I am sure, like, you could probably get buy-in from... You could probably get buy-in from Frito-Lay and, Nintendo or... Possibly Sony. I don't think Microsoft would support you on that for the Xbox stuff.
I want someone to send me a PlayStation. I spend far too much of my time playing Civilization on my PlayStation 3. It's like, funny.
You cut out on me there. What did you say? You want someone to send you what?
I was going to say, I want someone to send me more games for my PlayStation. I spend all my time playing Civilization, and it's a lot of fun, but I just can't stop playing it, and it, I don't know, it leads to late nights, building out cities and going for domination victories, man. Yes, I'm a nerd. I don't play the Kingdom Hearts games. I play the Build a City games.
Now, would you have a
Starcraft 3, man? That's what I want to play.
Oh, dude, I miss Warcraft. I miss Warcraft so much. It was so cool with little elves, and you click on them, and they're like, your wish, and I'm like, I wish for you to go and beat up on my enemies. Okay, I think I just revealed that I'm really, really old and pathetic. Okay! Maybe don't want to look.
No, not at all.
So now you haven't played World of Warcraft, have you?
No, see, I do not believe in the World of Warcraft crack. I have been warned. Carol, do you play WoW?
I do not play WoW, and it is specifically because I know that as soon as I start playing WoW, I will lose months of my life.
Yeah.
And I don't have months of my life I'm able to lose at this moment.
That's why you need the Google Summer of Gaming.
So let me get this straight. We should go and petition our employers to, in fact, not pay us to go to work, but to pay us to play WoW. Who would answer all
Sounds
of those
okay
search queries when people type them in? There's a whole building full of people who'd be playing WoW instead of answering your questions. Chaos would ensue. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Well, then we could all go over to Bing then, right?
Yeah, hope so. But I mean, then there would be no money to pay us to play video games. Again, this is a recursive problem.
It's a vicious cycle there.
Yep.
Anyway.
Well, guys, I appreciate you guys coming on the show and talking to us and letting everybody know about Google Summer of Code. It's an awesome project, and you guys have done great work for the community and for up-and-coming programmers. And we hope to hear more great things in the future from it.
Great. Thanks for having us on.
Before we wrap that up there, could you again... what is the deadline to petition to be part of Google Summer of Code?
If you are an open source project and you would like to apply to be a mentoring organization for Google Summer of Code, you have from 12 noon Pacific on March 8th until 4 p.m. Pacific on March 12th. And for your listeners who may be using non-U.S. time zones, that's March 8th at 19 UTC to March 12th at 23 UTC. And if you're a student, would-be student applicant, you can begin applying on March 28th at 12 noon Pacific. And you need to have submitted your application by April 9th at 12 noon Pacific. And for those of us not using US-based time zones, that's March 29th at 19 UTC and closing up on April 9th at 19 UTC. And since I should definitely go over all the standard URLs again, because URLs are fun, you can find everything that you would like to know about the program linked from code.google.com/SOC for, like, Summer of Code. And then if you wanted to read up more about the program just because you were curious to learn more about it but aren't a would-be open source project or student participant, head on over to the Google Open Source blog and look for post tag GSOC. And the Google Open Source blog is google-opensource, all one word, .blogspot.com. And like I said, all posts tagged with GSOC are your Google Summer of Code friends.
Awesome. You know, you guys need to come out with little commercials that you can download and submit to all the podcasts, and we could play on a regular basis.
That's not such a bad idea. That's a very good idea. Can we credit you for that and send you a game console and some
trainouts? Hey, you got it.
The summer of right. Promos.
Yeah.
The summer of promos. That's so awesome.
If we do a promotion and we get someone who applies because they heard the promotion, we will send you something.
No, but if you want
we'll
to
see
like,
the self promos out.
If you
I heard the self promo on the intro. That was really cool.
Yeah. If you do put together a little promo or a commercial or something, we would graciously play it.
You guys are awesome. Yeah. Maybe me and Carol will spend some time in the basement tomorrow trying to record something cool and pretending that we're clever, and then we'll send it to you.
That'd be great. It doesn't even have to be cool. It could be long
and
boring.
The only stipulation, it can't be recorded on a Mac. That's the only stipulation.
That's cool. I got a bunch of box in my office, man.
Audacity.
It doesn't work. I will record it using one of those little mini handheld tape recorder thingies.
That's acceptable.
And send you the tape with a little post-it note on it that says, ha-ha! And that's all. Your problem was underspecified.
I'll record it on my Nexus One. There you go.
Awesome. Perfect.
Awesome.
We're all about the Android here.
Just out of curiosity, we all have Android-based phones, I believe, now at this point. At Google, yep. Do you have a lot of people still using iPhones, or have they all, like...
Kind of yes, kind of no. I think it's one of those things where people like just have personal preferences. Like I got an iPhone back in the day, and now I only use my lovely little Android phone because I just prefer it. But to be honest with everybody, I missed my G1 with its wonderful keyboard, and I've actually thought about going out and getting a my actual physical keyboard. But there are still folks who are just diehard iPhone users, and they love their iPhone, and they think it's fun and dandy. So. To each their own.
Just wait till the new Windows Mobile comes out and everybody switches over to the new Windows Mobile.
Yeah, right.
Don't get me started on the e-waste
right.
And the phone upgrades and the business. Because I will just, the little hippie in me will come out and you'll never have us on the show again.
what are you talking about there?
Exactly. Don't worry about it.
Huh?
Now we're curious. You can't just drop something like that.
We're talking about the wastefulness of cell phones and people adding more electronics to their lives.
Did they disappear again?
I think so.
A little bit of a drop.
A little?
Or did we lose them this time?
Conference call lady came back again.
Ah, there we are.
But don't you send your phones to the organizations for, like, you know, women in shelters who would use phones, or they ship them overseas?
Of course, I totally recycle my old phones, but it's just one of those things where it's like, it's great to recycle your old phone, but at the same time, you know what, gentlemen, I'm gonna have to let this go because I'm about to stand on a soapbox, and I do not need to stand.
She's about to rant.
How tall am I? About 6'2". That's a bitty, pretty big soapbox, because I'm only like 5'4 and a half normally, so. Big soapbox. We're going to stay off the soapbox.
So now, you know, speaking of all these little electronic devices, though, have you finally moved away from having, like, you know, a smartphone, a media player, like, you know, portable media player, and, you know, maybe something else?
I personally have my Nexus One, and I have a separate iPod that I use, but that's specifically because I want the space that the iPod offers me that my phone doesn't. But I think that's, just a personal preference for a lot of people.
Plus, you might like to use your phone for something like phone calls.
I mean, heaven forfend that you would use your phone to make phone calls.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, no, I find that, too. I'm like, I like a phone, and it would be nice to have it all in one, but then I kind of prefer my media player to be separate, and I can do more things with it. And I'm not even too keen on having my media player play video.
Yeah, I at one point had an iPhone or an iPod that also did video, and I just found myself never using the darn thing because I put a few videos on it, and but then again, I'm weird,
yeah.
And I don't even have a media player anymore. Don't tell anyone.
Well, you do. You have one contained within your Nexus One.
But I don't actually use that functionality.
Use
so Carol's right. I have functionality that I do not tap into and make use of.
How do you listen to our show, then? I don't understand.
Well,
on our computer.
Yeah.
Hello? That's what browsers are for, and browsers need not always be. My friend Pamela Fox has decided that we need to stop calling smartphones phones and call them mini-tops. So you do not need your mini-top to listen to the podcast.
You don't need an iPod either.
What was that, Joel?
I said, you don't need an iPod either.
Nope.
For sure.
But what you do need is a Sansa clip, because those things are awesome.
Or a fuse. I bought my wife a Sansa fuse, and she loves it. She loves it.
Even know what gadgets you're talking about. I'm ashamed. I'm so ashamed.
A little audio player.
Cool.
They're cheap.
Fuse
the Sansa clips are like $20-$25 bucks. The fuses are a little more, because they have like externals. You can put SD cards in there.
Paid $60 for my wife's 4-gig fuse. Not bad for a 4-gig player.
Yeah,
they play just about anything.
For $20, it plays OGG, it plays FLAC, it plays MP3. I think it even plays Windows.
H.264?
That's really cool. I will totally check that out. That would be like an awesome thing to give like my nieces and nephews for gifts.
Yep. Nice stocking stuffer.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only problem with the Clip Plus, it's the best media player I have ever used in my life. The only problem with it is so small and so light, it's easy to just misplace
it.
Not realize we even have it on.
And accidentally wash it or something.
Or slam it in a car door.
But $20, man, but it's not a big deal.
$20, you can smash one in the car door once a week.
No, because that's when you do it.
That would be an e-waste problem.
Be sad, Dan, with his crush.
very sad day. But those are, you know, it's great because you can slide. They have the little they support micro SD cards and. Man, you just slide it on in there. You got, like, expandable storage. It's unlimited. Oh, don't get me started. I love those things.
You can have my soapbox for later.
We have enough soapboxes over here.
All right. We should do a soapbox exchange program. Right,
Google Summer of Soapbox.
There you go. Google Summer of Soapbox.
This Google Summer of Soapbox. I like it. We should subscribe to their newsletter.
And we should. I will subscribe to your podcast.
Well, you'll be hosting it because it's the Google Summer of Soapbox.
Hey, you know, we actually have some. Anyway, that's not really relevant. Alright, Dom, is there any other further data that we can provide to you or your listeners that will make them happy and help them have a better day?
No, I think you provided enough.
Yay!
Absolutely.
We try and be amusing. Alright,
thank you so much for having us.
Really, really appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Have a great week. And have a great one. Talk to you later.
Have a good night.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I heard a loud bang. I'll be right back. Hold on.
Uh-oh, phone's breaking at Dan's house. Get the shotgun, Dan.
I've heard a loud bang. I'll be right back.
Doesn't he live in a hood?
No, does he?
I don't think so, no.
What? I don't think so either.
We were wondering whether you live in a hood.
In the hood? No, I live at the bottom, right near the hood.
It's just as bad.
Yeah, well, no, it's close. It's like a stone's throw away.
So is it safe to walk around your neighborhood, or will you get mugged?
Oh, no, it's safe. The most questionable location
has been a shooting in a week.
Yeah, the most questionable location is about a block and a half away, but you'd have to cut through people's yards. And it's an underpass where a couple of crazy homeless people seem to hang out an awful lot and just, like, wander around and yell at nothing.
Cool.
Well, yeah. That's not me.
That doesn't sound very menacing.
No, it's not. I mean, I live in that area where the really nice part of Hampton, the rich part of Hampton, flows down and hits. I live at the bottom of that, and then it sort of rolls over into the not so nice part of Hampton, and then straight into the ghettos of Newport News.
The ghettos of Newport News.
But it's not very ghetto. Oh, you wouldn't believe it. Newport
That's where I stay every time I go to Williamsburg.
In Newport
Seriously,
News, what's wrong with
cheap.
You? You know why it's cheap? Because there's
cheap.
A really high crime rate. It's like one of the largest murder districts in the area.
Eh. Where?
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Columbus.
You come down here and stay in Newport News and you don't stop by to visit me?
No, this is about like 10 years ago, man. Over 10 years ago. Like my honeymoon. A long time ago.
Oh my God, if I was your wife, I would have ditched you right there and leaving me. We're going to Newport News for our honeymoon.
She didn't know any better.
Oh,
no, we went to Williamsburg, so.
Williamsburg is nice.
And then we went to Busch Gardens, too. Back then when I drank, and she got her samples of beer, and I got her samples of beer.
Oh,
I drank them anyway. I was buzzing. Anyway.
Damn.
Dan, I heard you got a new phone.
Yeah, I got a nice, thanks to a wonderful listener who gave us one arrived on Monday, and I popped my SIM card in, and I was good to go. I haven't had too much time.
You're on edge.
Yeah, I haven't had too much time to hack around with it because I've been extremely busy. But it's really cool. I really like it. I like it a lot. Every time you switch to a new like cell phone or something, it takes a little while to get accustomed to how it operates compared to the old one.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, but the nice thing about Android is, Dan, is once you learn that, it's pretty much the same on every phone with some minor differences.
Just little graphical differences, like if you have an HTC Sense-based phone or a Motorola Blur, you know, with the click and the Devour. And, which the Devour looks like a sweet phone. But
and the Desire looks like an updated Nexus One.
Uh huh. The Desire, I Desire. As well as the what's that one the
Desire,
sequel to the
Desire?
Hero? I can't remember it. The one with the aluminum shell. I can't remember it.
Well, there's one coming out for Verizon on tomorrow, actually, at Best Buy. $4.99 is one coming out. I think
it's
an
Devour.
It's a Motorola, right? The Devour, right?
It's the Motorola
yeah.
One, yeah. Yeah, I played around with that one a while.
Yeah, the backflip's out soon, too. Motorola black backflip on AT&T. Their first Android phone. So now they're on every carrier. How many carriers are the iPhone on? Enough said.
Yeah, and AT&T, actually, which the iPhone is on, they're going to have some Android phones very soon. They're going to have the Motorola backflip. And there was a couple other ones, too, they're getting. They're supposed to get a version of the Nexus One. And I think there's also... Is it the Sony Ericsson that's supposed to be on AT&T? I forget.
Xperia,
so
maybe?
So many phones, though. There's so many phones, though. It's all a blur. But it's good, you know. We got choice. You got different phones, different carriers. You know, you get what you like, you know. There's some deals. You can get a low-end phone. I hear on Verizon that the Aris, which was selling for $149 and then it was down to $99, I hear they're going to offer that for free with a two-year contract. And I hear the Droid is going to be dropping down to $99 with a two-year contract.
The HTC Legend, that's the one.
I read that earlier on Engadget, I think it was.
Yeah, so you can get a freaking Droid, an awesome phone.
Yeah, because they did a review on the new Motorola one that's coming out tomorrow. Saying it's the same price point as the Droid is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I played around with that new one on it. It's a nice phone. The keyboard is nicer than
which
the
one?
Droid.
The backflip?
The Motorola one that's coming out on Verizon tomorrow.
The Devour.
Oh, the Devour.
Devour. Yeah. The keyboard is a rounded keyboard. So all the you can actually feel the difference between the keys. That was the
About
only
time.
Nicer thing I thought. I thought the Droid was nicer myself. I happen to like that
one. Yeah, the Droid's a beefier phone.
Yeah, it's beefier, but the keyboard was the only thing really, really nice about that one. I mean, it's a nice phone, but
bigger.
The keyboard definitely stood out as different than the Droid.
The Droid is bigger, I should say.
Well, it's big, yeah. It's got a bigger screen on it. I don't know if I'd say
screen.
It was snappier. I couldn't really. I didn't play with it for that long, but
now, maybe you can answer this for me, Alan. Does the Droid have the Dolphin browser as its default browser, or is it the WebKit one?
I believe it's the WebKit one.
Okay.
I was trying to
mess around with it. Yeah. I was trying to mess around with it in the store, and I don't know, it just didn't act like the browser on my G1 at all. It was okay, but I was trying to do some of the things I would normally do on my G1, and it kind of did some weird things. So I think it was Dolphin they actually had on it in the store. So, which is possible.
It works for me, so I can't really say too much there.
Now you guys have had your phones for a good clip now. What sites do you recommend for learning about flashing the ROM and stuff and upgrading and trying out community builds?
CyanogenMod. Yep.
That's the only stop you need to go for your phone.
CyanogenMod has the best modified ROM for the G1,
period.
And he also has a version now that runs on the Nexus One also.
Yep.
And what he does with the version for the G1 is, it's running Android 1.6, and he has a whole bunch of development branch stuff backported back into his ROM.
From Eclair.
Right. Yeah. So you got stuff in there like pinch to zoom and whatnot. All that stuff is in there. The biggest thing for me is that the applications, you're able to install them onto your SD card. What you do is you create either an EXT2, 3, or 4 partition besides your FAT32, and all your applications will go to your SD card. So for that 256 megabyte limit that you have with the G1, it's as much as you want to allocate for a EXT3 partition on the flash card. So if you have like a 2 gig card or a 4 gig card, you can put like half of that for your applications or whatever, and that'll really make your experience a lot better. You're able to go application crazy and just install everything in sight for a while. You know, like how you get like people new to Linux, they do that. They do like apt-get install everything. Well, this is going to be the same deal. If you set the apps onto the flash, you'll be able to do the same thing with Android, and you'll go bonkers.
I've never filled it up with a 2 gig EXT3 partition.
Yeah.
Plus, I also added a 91 meg swap partition. I think 91 is the max. But I just added a swap partition, and then all of a sudden I got like another boost.
Yeah, and the other thing that you could do with, if you have CyanogenMod installed, what you need to do is you need to root the phone, and that'll let you be able to do tethering. So, you'll have your phone, you'll be able to make your phone accessible to other machines nearby. You can make it like an access point.
But then he'll have to actually switch to T-Mobile to make it worth that, because he's on AT&T and he's...
Oh, yeah. You should get a T-Mobile account, Dan.
I T-Mobile account will happen in another couple of months.
Does it suck down there? How's T-Mobile in your area, do you know?
You have 3G down there? I think it's good. It's got to be better than AT&T. Because AT&T is just getting hammered down here.
I'm happy.
All those iPhones.
With T-Mobile, I have to say. When I first got it, they didn't have 3G where I live, but like within like a month or two, it's 3G, and it's pretty good over here.
Yep. Columbus was the same way. About the first 6 months I had my phone, I had no 3G. It was Edge, but I still browsed on the bus and everything with Edge. Edge is slow, but
Edge
it's
wasn't
not horrible.
That bad.
It's not like GPRS slow. No, it's not horrible.
I mean, yes, there's a definite improvement when you hit the 3G, but it's very usable.
Oh yeah,
it's usable.
Actually,
I wouldn't stream any videos.
When you had an iPhone,
it
actually was the only thing that worked half the time.
That's ridiculous.
I think I streamed Pandora over Edge, and it worked fine.
Yeah, you can do audio over Edge, but like video, forget it. You need 3G.
Yep.
Yeah, there was a lot of buffering time if you did stuff like that.
Like the Ustream, you see on Ustream, Pat, that they actually have a viewer app now for the G1 for Android.
Really? It's not flash based. Yeah. I'm assuming.
No.
It must encode on the fly to H.264, because that's the video decoder that most of these phones have.
Yep. But, yeah, I actually haven't viewed it much on it, on the Ustream browser, but it's there. I actually installed it. I haven't actually, like I said, I haven't actually viewed a whole lot on it. But, and then, Dan, you need to load Astrid for a task manager. Astrid synchronizes with Remember the Milk. I thought it did one other online cloud task manager too. I can't remember which one. I have been using Remember the Milk forever though, so.
So, one question
My
I
track.
Did have is My there a f- is there a file? Alan, why are you talking over top of me?
Well, I just started, then I heard you talking.
You know what? You and I, we're going to have a problem come April 4th. Going down.
Going down.
Is there a file browser on the phone somewhere?
Astro.
Actually, there's a couple different ones that you can install. One is, like Joel said, Astro. The one that I like is, what is it, E-Strong, I think it is. Hold on, I'll tell you. Which is, they have two different applications. One's a file, E-Strongs, right? One's a file manager, and the other one's is a process manager. They used to have them combined for a while, but E-Strong's file manager, to me, I think that's the nicest one. That one, besides being able to do file manage locally on your phone, for your on your SD card, you can also mount Samba partitions, too, which is pretty nice.
So there isn't any file manager by default in the phone?
No.
Not by default, no.
Nope. Nor is there a default terminal app unless you root the phone. When you root the phone, you automatically get both the terminal application as well as a super user terminal.
Alright, because the phone is rooted, so I do have a terminal.
At least with CyanogenMod.
Did you say the Astro File Manager is good?
I've been using it, but I'm going to try the E-Strongs.
E-Strong is really nice. I like E-Strongs a lot.
Oh, E-Strong. E-Strong File Explorer?
Yeah.
Yep.
And the Process Manager is pretty good, too.
Is that a separate install?
Yeah, they're separate. Yeah. They used to be combined at one point, but they broke them out. Dan, you run
like
Myth,
the advanced
right?
Task Manager.
What? Yeah, I run Myth.
Definitely check out Myth Mode. Basically, what that lets you do, it lets you turn your phone into a remote control for Myth over your wireless network.
There's also a Boxy remote, too.
Yeah, well, I don't run Boxy, so
and
it doesn't XBNC matter.
And XBNC remote.
All right, I'm going to try the E-Strong's Task Manager, too. And you said Myth Mote.
And Task Killer.
Yeah, Task Killer's good. No, the E-Strong
why doesn't E-Strong... Does E-Strong have a Task Killer?
It's got a separate. If you do the Process Manager, you can kill processes through that.
I like the Advanced Task Killer. That puts an icon up in your notification area, and you can just do a swipe down and then tap on that to get to the Task Manager. Very handy.
So with the Myth Mote, is there something I have to do on the Myth TV side?
The only thing you have to do on the Myth TV side is you go to your settings inside of Myth. You go to Setup, and it's under General, and you tab through the page, and you'll see a checkbox that says Allow Connections Over the Network. And you just check that off. Actually, if you go to in the Myth TV forum listing on the Tech Show forum, Patrick Archibald posted a couple of videos demoing Myth Mode and then how to set it up. It's really simple. It takes like 2 seconds to do it.
Here you go.
Maybe I'm going to go do that right.
Remote with him everywhere.
This is the application you all need.
What, Conan?
The Conan application.
Oh, yeah. The Schwartz?
The Schwartz,
There's also TV.com. That's a good app.
Yeah, TV.com is awesome.
Yeah. Stream CBS shows.
TED Talks, they have an app.
Yeah. Actually, for a podcast recording, you might want to look at Hertz, H-E-R-T-Z. It'll record to a WAV file on your phone.
Yeah, for streaming audio, for streaming audio, I highly recommend Stream Furious.
Streaming to you.
Now, if you're a gamer and you have some old Sega Genesis ROMs, check out Gensoid Lite. That's a Sega Genesis emulator.
There's also Share by QR Code. That's a good one. That one you use, basically, it lets you share a
YouTube video or a URL via putting up a QR code on your phone screen. Plus, there's the barcode scanners that let you scan the QR codes that you see on various websites about Android apps. And when you scan that with your phone's camera, it will automatically take you to that application in the Android marketplace.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. I've showed that to like some
QR
Apple
code
iPhone users, and they're pretty impressed with that.
They're like,
everybody who
sees
that,
cool,
whether they're a developer or not, or user, is impressed with that one.
Yeah, you like on a website looking at the you're looking like a review of the app, and there's the barcode on your monitor, and you just scan it, and boom, it's installed.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's a QRcodegenerator.com. You can actually make your own.
Right. It's also Shop Savvy. Shop Savvy is the best application for barcode lookup.
That's one of the oldest apps on Android, and that's still very good.
And Shazam as well. Dan will like Shazam.
What's Shazam do?
Shazam.
Basically, it records a short, if you hear music playing, like you're out in the mall and you hear a song playing, you tap on the Shazam logo.
Shazam.
Records a little bit, and then it goes out and figures out what the song is. It's actually, I've never had it been wrong. Not once.
Urban Spoon.
Urban Spoon. Never heard of that one.
Urban Spoon. That was an iPhone app, and basically what you do is you load it up and then you shake your phone, and it picks places in your area to go eat.
Well, that's kind of like what Wear does now. Wear does that too, on the. What's the option? I'm trying to look on my phone here. But Wear does that too. It actually has a little game like you play. You have the Wear logo and it's bouncing around the screen. And when it finally connects with the other ball that's bouncing around, then it gives you a list of a list of restaurants near you to try.
That's too hard. This one you just shake.
Yeah.
What is that
value drive
for the,
as well?
What is that value for the Myth Moat? That you have to enable on the Myth TV side. Do you know what it's called?
Hold on, I'll go in. I'll tell you right now. Give me a second.
Oh, I didn't know if I could go in. I was just going to
enable remote connection or something like that.
I'll tell you exactly where it is. Yeah, allow network remote connect or something like that. I'll tell you in a second.
Yeah. You got to put WarDrive on there for you.
Yep. WarDrive's cool too.
The Radio Paradise widget. That's cool. My Tracks is really
iHeart Radio.
Yeah, that's commercial crap. Frozen Bubble. No phone is complete without Frozen Bubble.
Actually, it's not commercial, iHeart Radio. That's just
gets
you clear channel stations. Listen to it. You don't have to pay for that.
I try to stay away from clear channel stations, period.
That's nice to have.
Oh, I know. I just
Stream Furious is actually very good. You get a whole bunch of different stuff on there.
Google Sky Map. That's a great one.
The Cyanogen mod. Install CM Updater, Dan. Gotta do it.
Okay, Dan.
Yeah,
you go to utilities. Utility setup. Then setup. Then I think it's in general. And it's like, it's like the 10th screen in. It says remote control, Dan. Enable network remote control interface. Make sure that's checked off.
Jeez,
and then you go through
in?
It's like the 9th or 10th screen in. Yeah.
Wow.
And then you you need to get out of the front end and restart it. And it should connect then. It's really nice. You could set up a profile. So if you had multiple front ends around the house, you could set it up so that you can say, have one in like the basement or the family room or the bedroom or whatever, and you can connect to the different interfaces.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it works really well. Over Wi-Fi, it's pretty impressive. It's a nice application the guy wrote.
I got to rebuild my MythBox. It's decided to not do anything anymore. I don't know what the hell's going wrong with it. It won't change. I can change channels, like if I sit at the keyboard here, on one of the front ends on it, I can change channels up and down. It will not change channels on its own.
Oh, you mean the blaster?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the blaster will change channels if I sit here at the keyboard and change channels, you know, like up and down the keys to get to the next channel. It'll work fine then. But you set it up for something to record, it will not send the channels over.
Really? What distro are you using?
Mythbuntu.
Yeah. You run the latest
one? It looked
one?
Like it was I looked in the logs. It looks like it's trying to send four numbers instead of three on it, and now I can't even get it to send any numbers.
What kind of remote are you using?
It's that the ones that everybody recommends, the
Microsoft one?
The Microsoft ones, yeah.
What script are you using?
I've got the shell script that came off of the wiki page. Actually, uh-huh. It's the same one that actually is the one, most of that is your page.
That one's Python based.
Well, there's the Python, but there's also one that's in there is the shell script as well. I was using the shell that seemed to work, and then it just stopped. It's just like
you should try the Python one.
Huh. Yeah,
give the Python one a try, man. I used that one for years, man, without any problems.
No, I'll give that one a try, because like, I'm just wiping the whole thing out and starting over again. I'm just work at it slow. If it doesn't work this time, I'm going to show up at your front door with a six-pack.
No problem, man. I'll help you out. We'll get that sucker up and running in no time.
Because, I mean, I've never had a problem until I started using this blaster thing, and it's in the right spot and everything. Like I said, you know, like
gotta work,
if I sit here remotely, you know,
let me know
keyboard,
if you need
I
help,
Alan.
I can come on by and I'll help you out.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait probably this weekend and give it a try.
Yeah, let me know.
Cool.
All right. No problem.
Anyway.
So what else we got, guys? Amazon signed a patent agreement with Microsoft. What the F?
What are you gonna do?
Is this related to FAT32 with the Kindle?
Probably.
Probably, right?
You know what?
My question is if FAT32 is such an issue that you're gonna get sued by Microsoft, don't use FAT32. What the fuck?
Yeah. Just use the XT3 or something. Come
on, use some other file system. What the hell, man?
Actually, here's a better one, man. The Ubuntu One Music Store is in Rhythmbox now.
That's cool. That's just the front end for some other service, right? 7digital, I think it's called.
Uses Amazon.
British service.
I thought it uses Amazon.
No, it uses this service called 7digital. The British service.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so it's basically just a front end, and I think some people have bitched that it only has MP3s on there.
They were
griping that they want an AUG.
Of course. I actually heard about that, and I listened to Hacked. I think it was Hacked either last night or this morning when they came out.
That's a funny show. I was listening to that today, too.
Oh, it was stroking off.
They're funny, those guys. They're always cursing each other out. It's pretty funny.
You got an open source guy and a Mac head together. I mean, it's hilarious.
One of the things oh my goodness, every time I talk, you talk over me, Joel. What the hell? But
go,
before
Dan.
We get too far away from the Amazon thing, one of the things that I read about the Amazon deal and a lot of the deals that are made is they sign a non-disclosure agreement in some respects that only allows Microsoft to really talk about it. So Microsoft can come out spewing whatever they want, and the other company just essentially has to keep their mouth shut, which I don't understand why they do that. I mean, I understand why Microsoft doesn't. I just don't understand why the other company agrees to that crap. Anyway, you were...
Exactly, Dan. My thought exactly.
Whatever you say, man.
What about a PDF viewer? You guys have a preference for that?
The only one I found that was worth a darn, you actually would have to probably pay for. That's the one that comes with Docs2Go from DataViz. It worked pretty well. But I haven't looked at it in a long time. I haven't really come up with a need to view PDFs on my phone. I'm with you, though. That's one of the first things I tried to look for.
You need Brian to support the comic book reader. That's what you need, Dan.
Yeah. Brian needs to support his comic book reader, then Dan would buy it.
Well, if he did already,
or whatever it's called now.
We need a developer to create a TLLTS widget for the
phone. I'm thinking of working on that, actually. I was thinking of giving that a shot.
What, so that you can fire up the stream?
Well,
have a little app so that you can download the show, or it'll maybe... You can have different tabs. Like, one tab you can pull down the RSS feed and download the episode. Right, you can listen live, maybe, and also maybe IRC.
Or you could just pick an episode and it'll stream that show for you.
Dog catcher, I don't know.
Now we need
to have TLTS on the somebody's screen,
We need to have a personalized app that can be right on one of your desktops that you can just click and go.
We need
marketing, man. Marketing.
Got the Droid Comic Viewer.
Droid Comic Viewer. You put Facebook on your phone too? I like the Facebook client. It's nice.
Nah, I was trying to find a Buzz client. They have the mobile Google Apps.
There is none.
There is none.
Really not like it's more like just connecting to the website than anything.
Yeah. That's the one I found too. You would think there would be one, but there isn't. That kind of torques me off a little bit too. Just a little bit though.
We'll give them time.
Yeah. Foursquare. Layer. Excuse me. You need to put Layer on there.
Pandora's good.
What's Layer?
Yep. Yeah.
Definitely need Pandora.
Layer is all altered reality. Basically, you can bring up a layer, like, for example, Yelp.com. Yeah, augmented reality, yeah. When you hold your phone up, it uses your camera, and you'll see these little, like, flag posts wherever, like, as you move around, the little posts for the places that you're looking for come into your camera view. So you can kind of get like a general bearing of where that restaurant might be.
What's it called? Layer? L-A-I-R or
L-Y? Layer as in like layer cake. L-A-Y-A-R. Not lay her.
L-A-Y-A-R?
L-A-Y-A-R. A-R.
Layer reality browser.
As an augmented reality. Yeah. Speaking of that, there is porn on the Android marketplace. Unlike the iPhone.
Ouch. Wow, wow.
Pornhub.
I'm going to say it. And Joel, those apps would be.
I actually never installed any of them, to be honest. But...
So when you install Layer, where does it appear? Or is it just in the, you have to click the phone to get it? I mean, camera.
No, you just, it's in your menu. You just bring up the menu and tap on it from there. Of course, then there's Quick. My favorite movie app.
You stream it?
Actually, I've been using the movie in Wear. Just to find like where movies are near you. That's all.
It is called Layer, right?
Yeah. Can you find it? I wonder if they changed it.
Oh, there it is. It just appears.
Like, yeah.
God damn it.
Press like Sherpa changed its name from Sherpa to Geodelic. Because Geodelic is the name of the company, so they just kind of changed the name of the app too.
All right, I'm going to fire a Layer up right now and see what I can see when I see it.
It's pretty nifty. Well, you're going to notice, right, with you being heavy Wi-Fi right now, your battery's going to get sucked down.
Oh, my God, yeah, I know. I got to plug it in on a regular
basis.
Yeah,
the G1 has terrible battery life, man.
Yes, it does. I've got an extended battery in a... That actually gets me through the day. But barely.
Yeah, it's
pretty bad. I get about 2 days out of mine.
Well, you got a droid, so I don't want to hear it.
That's right.
This lady I work with, she has a droid. She always comes over to me for, like, questions and stuff. I start showing her stuff on her, and it's like, oh, shit, man, this phone kicks ass, I think to myself.
It makes you want to go buy a milestone, don't it?
Shut the phones off. We're hearing the noise.
Yeah, that's Dan being too close to his phone.
Shut the phone off, Dan.
You hear noise?
Yeah. Play with it while you're on the crapper. Now while we're doing the show.
It's the GSM talk.
You hear it now?
The microphone's picking it up. No, not right now.
Not right now, no.
Yeah, I heard it earlier. I figured it was Dan too close to the microphone.
Oh, sorry.
I think he's sitting on the throne.
Yes.
Dan, 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 dan.
I posted a link. Pat Archibald did a video demo.
That was a really good one.
Yeah, it's a nice application, man. It works really well. The app is real nice. The guy who wrote it did a real good job.
As soon as my daughter stops watching anime on the Myth box, you know, it's crazy. Ever since they installed Myth TV and they learned that they can get, we got the widescreen television, the flat screen, and everything looks nice on it, and they found out that they can run web browsers on there, they watch anime and play educational websites on the damn TV. So you can't do anything. Like, they're in there doing educational stuff, and it's a TV. You're not supposed to be doing educational things. It's not appropriate.
Meaning you want some you porn time.
Well, no thanks. I you know what? I never thought about running you porn on that TV.
Hey, honey, you can put the kids to bed.
And I'll put yourself to bed, TV. Too.
Yeah. I'll be in about 10 minutes.
10, 5, come on.
There you go.
I got a fast internet connection.
5 and I only fast forward to things.
It only takes us 5 minutes. You porn.
Yeah, I find that the battery really sucks itself dry.
Yeah, it's horrible.
With Wi-Fi.
That's okay.
That's what the USB cord's for.
Yeah. I'm going to say, I might switch back to my stock battery only because I'd like to have it a little bit thinner.
Okay, get off the phone. We hear the phone again.
I'm not on the phone.
Someone's on the phone.
Nobody's on the phone.
Gorgon, then.
So it'll we'll be mine because I'm not even hitting the 3G. I'm on the mine's on Wi-Fi.
Mine's off, so it's not me.
It's probably mine. it's gone now.
Anyway, cool.
And we still haven't heard what Link has to say about his droid.
Yeah, really.
Link's on call tonight.
See, I was on call last week, and I called in. I don't know what the deal is.
He was saying he had to go in at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he was at work all
Ooh.
Day.
Ooh,
so he's
okay.
Pretty busy. Yeah.
Which means he has to drive in. He has to drive in, too, because there ain't no train at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Ugh. You calling Link out? Train. Calling him a punk?
No.
Calling you out, like.
No, yeah, no, wait. No, I'm calling him a slacker. But that's okay. He would identify with that. Probably. Dan, I got something you need to get if you want to get back into OpenStreetMap and you don't want to deal with your Garmin.
Is that the OSM app?
Reviewed it. No, there's a couple. Oh, there is an OSM app on the Android. I forgot about that. There is that. But no, I have a GPS data logger from QStars I'm working on a review for. And for the first time ever, it actually... Now, the software it comes with is Windows software, and I'm actually having a bit of a trouble getting it going. I'm actually trying to get it going in a virtual machine. But that's okay. There's a program called BT747, which lets me use it directly on Linux with no problems. And from there, I can convert it to a Google KML. I can go convert it to an OpenStreetMap file, upload to the OpenStreetMap, to a Common Delimited. I mean, it's an awesome app, BT747. If you have a data logger, it's something that would be very handy, especially if it's the QStars or I think iBlue, I think, is the other ones. I can't remember all of them, but it's a neat little data logger. The one I have will do up to 5 hertz, which means it'll take 5 samples per second of your location. So it can get really fine-grained. That one, it's okay. I like it. But my favorite one was one by VisionTac. That one was even cooler because you basically could take a micro SD card, pop it in there, and it would automatically write the track to a CSV file. Then you would have to convert that to OpenStreetMap or whatever with other Linux tools. But that the VisionTac is pretty sweet. So I wish I was that was one I actually had to send back.
All right. So what? Why would this interest me? It
well,
sounds like it's an application
thinking,
used with a GPS device, and you had just said if I didn't want to use my Garmin.
Well, yeah. There's no screen on it, so basically you don't have to think about it. You just fire it up; it automatically grabs the satellite signal. And
oh, it's a device that you buy. It's
forward.
A separate device. I thought it was an app. I thought you were talking about something that I would
it's cheap too.
Hook into
it's a lot
the Android into the Android, and it would do the tracking. For
no, no.
No,
it has nothing to do with Android. It's just
right.
A separate device. It's got a little bit of storage on board of it, on board the device.
I see what you're saying.
But it would actually you can actually use the Bluetooth to pull the GPS, like for example, to connect it to your laptop to give your laptop a GPS. There's no reason to do it on the phone, but I just thought you're kind of interested in OpenStreetMap a little bit still. Well, maybe not so much anymore, but... So...
What do you got to play us out tonight, Dan?
A song.
Very good.
A song. Did we get to hear it this week?
Yeah, you do, actually.
Yeah.
Make sure you mute yourself so it doesn't feed back. Or it won't feed back, but you just got to mute yourself so you don't talk over
people
it
don't
and
hear
it echoes.
You. Farmville on the Nexus One?
I can think of nothing more of a waste of time.
Mafia Wars.
So next week, it's just us, and a week after that, we have Christian Linhart.
Ah, yes.
Excellent. Demo recorder.
Sweet.
Who lined up Christian Linhart?
I did.
Okay. That way I know he'll get the information on how to connect.
Ah, yeah.
Excuse me.
You know who we should have on as a guest? Gorkon, we should have your favorite person in the whole wide world, the person who runs Gear Diary. What's her name? Is it Julie?
Judy?
Judy.
Judy?
There you go.
That could be arranged. Seriously.
Why not?
I don't know. She's not, she doesn't use a lot of open source. She's one of those Mac users.
Ooh, Freedom Hater.
So, yeah. But she's cool. I mean, she's just, in case you didn't know, have you ever read the website, thegadgeteer.com, for gadget reviews? She used to write over there first. But then she decided to go out on her own, and it's been pretty successful. We're doing pretty well. I mean, there's we've never had more people writing, and I'm like the lone Linux guy. Some of the other people will try it, but none of them use it like I do daily. So daily. It's the only at home Linux is the only thing I ever use anymore. Has been for years.
All right, I will keep that in mind.
Play us out.
Got a song called The Final Rewind by Triad.
It's the final rewind.
And yes, you will be able to hear it now. So
Young Blood.
I will start this up, play us out, and we will be back next week. Say bye.
Thanks
for
listening,
one, guys.
Everybody. Have a good night.
Here we go. Final rewind.
I'm Austin bound, get my feelings checked at the door.
That's right, Texas has its own community-run Linux Fest on April 10th, 2010 in Austin, Texas. Go to texaslinuxfest.org for details. And remember, get your Linux on.
I'm Austin bound, get my eyes set on the price.
Can we talk about the new search of computers?
Can we talk about multiprocessing?
Can we talk about Beowulf clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just talk geek to me.
Hey, it's Deep Geek. Please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.talkgeektome.us. That's www.talkgeektome.us. Thank you.
Just talk geek to me.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? With my tongue brush.
Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Daddy has a gun indeed.
He does. And he knows how to use it.
Boom, baby.
Pop, 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 pop. Ah, he's got an ass gun. He's got.
I had one of them today, man. I had enough gas. I think I could have filled the Hindenburg today, man.
Oh, jeez.
Started to how would you do with their Achilles heel?
I was methane is hard. Would you eat sauerkraut?
No, I have no clue what I ate. It's the whole damn thing, man. I've been cutting back on it. Oh, man.
Chili.
That's for sure.
Chili would get you going, man.
Yeah, but what?
Hey, almost all my snow's melted.
Yeah, we got a shitload of more, though, tonight.
Are you? We're getting nothing.
This ain't a foot.
Really?
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
At least sucks. We're in the 12 to 18 range still.
Yeah.
It's probably closer
really
to a foot, though.
Sucks. That really, really sucks.
Well, we got hammered last time.
Is that true?
We were due, though.
What's that, about 4 or 5 feet total?
What do you mean, over the season? We've actually dodged it.
Yeah.
Philly's gotten it worse, man. They had 2 storms in a row that was like 2 feet each time.
Jeez. I remember those days. I remember one city I lived in, Essington, which is just... It's from where Lake is, it's far south. It's down by the airport. And the plows would come down our street in the neighborhood, actually. Which, you know, I've seen one like once in 2 years or 10 years here. I mean, 10 years. Yeah. And then but down there they'd plow you in, and my brother and I would have to go dig a path out to the driveway so my dad could get in the driveway. And it was like, you know, about 4 or 5 foot tall pile of snow and ice, all hard. So we're sitting there hacking at it with shovels. Fun.
Good times.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Hanging it up for the evening.
Have a good one.
Hanging it up.
Have a good one.
Don't have a stroke shoveling.
I'll do my best not to.
Nice.
So you already got some coming down now, Pat?
I can't see out the window from where I'm sitting.
Hmm.
I think it's supposed to start later.
It's all around us right now. I'm looking on our radar. It's all around us, but it's only been light right here. Nothing accumulating. I don't know, I've enjoyed walking to the bus stop this week and keeping my feet dry. So. Alright, take her easy in the snow, guys.
Yeah, you can have a good one. I'm going to stop the recording now. That would make it better when I actually have connectivity going. All right.
Well, I got the recording on my end going on, so.
All right. I mean, I got it going on here too. We got it all going on.
It's all going on.
I just had to connect the client. Yummy delicious. Alt mixer. No, I don't want that. Ugh. On the workstation, I never use. I wonder.
One, two, three.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a link it bad. For the strong men, go to
www.gs.org.
And I see challenges of Linux link down there.
That sounds like distortion, Dan.
Just sit right there, cause the gather just about to begin.
Holy cow, this is horrible.
Yeah, I'm gonna feed it back so you can hear it.
No, I can hear it. It's coming through to me, too.
Oh, my God.
Hold on. Testing. All right, it might get loud a second. Hold on.
One, two, three.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. For the strong men, go direct to dlgs.org. And I see challenges of Linux link down
there. Oh, wait a minute.
Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the gather's just about to begin.
Wow, I don't think I have any eardrums.
Was that one too loud too?
Really loud.
One, two, three.
Thank you.
Big O Showtime. It's a little thing tech show in there.
Is that still too loud for you?
It's a little better, but it's still pretty loud.
Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it
back. Oh, wait a minute.
My eardrums aren't bleeding.
DLGS.org. And I see challenges of Linux link down there. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the gather's just about to begin.
Alright.
I think I'm getting heart palpitations from that loud music.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Say something.
1, 2, 1, 2. Hello.
All right. Testing. All right, we're going to get an echo playing that back. Why is that? How can I get rid of the echo?
Can't see what you're doing, Dan, so I can't help you.
All right. What's this? All right, now that is the audio muted.
Thank you.
What do I need to do next? Testing, 1, 2, 3. Give me some words.
Check, check, 1, 2. What the hell is everybody? It's a 8:15. We're all going to be straggling in at the very last second. The hell with them.
Yeah.
A bunch of rock stars pulling up in a limo.
Oh, why? Why isn't the stream going? Because...
You didn't start it.
That's what I like to see. All right. Now we just need some listeners.
Maybe a guest or two.
Hey, yo. All right. Scale is over, right?
Yep, that was this past weekend.
Excellent. Texas Linux Fest. That's one less promo we have to play.
Well, you could play self if they got the audio promo. You also got the Oddcam promo.
That's right, self. I was wondering. That's true. I do have the Oddcam.
Damn, Tiger Woods' wife is pretty hot, man.
Who's?
Tiger Woods.
Isn't that his, like, former, soon-to-be former wife?
Yeah, she's taking a vast of court, probably.
Dave's former wife. Dave Yates' former wife.
Oh, she's a knockout, man. Have you seen her? She's freaking beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Swedish chick.
Wouldn't you like to know?
I'll post an image of her.
Somehow I ended up with too few. Oh, that's right. I don't need this open. Ay, ay, ay.
Is that your jaw moving up and down, Dan?
Yeah, it's my big ass.
I can hear your ligaments snapping in your neck. What are you doing? Like, eating like a whole goat, like a python?
Yeah.
You got your jaw dislocated.
Dan is devouring something again, huh?
That's enough out of you, Alan.
That's pretty much, yeah.
Good evening, sir. How are you today?
Well, not too bad. How are you?
Waiting for the snow.
Yeah, snow apocalypse too.
No, we never get that much snow down here. It's just been raining. So I doubt I'll get anything.
Quick question.
The asterisk box, right?
What's that?
You can make calls out. Account, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you got to dial 9 first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, who are you calling?
Because tomorrow I'm going to be on the phone with M-Wave. I got the box I ordered today. Of course, it doesn't work. Falling on the girls.
What kind of box did you get?
It's a mini ITX. It actually looks really nice. Problem is, when I plug it in, push the button, nothing happens.
That sucks.
Connections inside. Looks like it's plugged in tight. Just nothing works. I'm Austin
bound, get my feelings checked. Alan, guess what?
Unplug the cable, plug them back in.
Make sure the power connectors were connected to the right spot.
Alan, guess what? Listen, but don't say anything.
In Austin, Texas. Go to TexasLinuxFest.org for details. And remember,
what you do?
Did you hear that? Huh?
What you do?
I diverted the streams. I think it was all Pulse Audio this whole time.
Yeah, Pulse Audio is a piece of crap, man.
I was there. And we don't need to hear that during the show.
Yeah, it's a real nice box, but unfortunately, it don't work.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. Oh well, like I said, not like I'm, you know, I haven't waited for it, so I'll just call them up tomorrow and see if they can ship me out a box, and then when I get it, I'll ship this one back. I have to figure out why I can't, all of a sudden can't access my external drive here, my network drive. It's pissing me off. Because 2 days ago, I could. Now it tells me I don't have enough access permission to it. Just put a terabyte and a half on it. It's going to piss me off.
Hard drive space is cheap, man.
Oh, yeah. I bought this, like, network, the Buffalo network box. And it had, like, 500 gigs in it to begin with, but unfortunately, I've used it up. I've put a terabyte USB drive on there, or a terabyte and a half. I started copying over all my movies. It worked fine. I was going to start copying my audio stuff over, you know, my music and stuff over, and it keeps telling me I don't have the permissions to do it. And yet everything seems to be owned by me, so I'm not totally sure why it's fucking up.
Somebody better RTFM.
That's what I'm doing now. Not having much luck, but I'm doing that now. Alright, I don't think I need to hear the stream anymore either, so.
I can see that Joel is connected. Unless that's his connection from last week that never disconnected. So you know what we do?
Disconnect.
Hang it up. Gone. Gone. Wait, how's he still connected? Hang it up. Gone. Alan, are you calling in via a regular phone?
No, I'm coming in through Gizmo.
Oh. Why don't I see you in here?
Coming in through Zipline, actually.
Oh, that must be... Oh, wait, yeah, that's right. There we go. Wait. I see Pat. How is it that there's two?
Two. Two Pats, not one.
And why is it giving you a regular phone number?
Who, me or Pat?
I think you.
I'm coming in with a regular SIP phone.
Oh, I see you.
I don't know, maybe Gizmo called
no,
you?
No, it's listed as caller.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
Huh. It just has like a phone number in there. Good news is it's not Joel.
Yeah, did you see that posting in the forum about him? The Gorkon episode?
Yes, I did.
He was a little bit rambunctious last week.
I thought he was good.
Yeah.
No, he was good. Good at talking over the damn gas. I'll be right back.
Excuse me. Meanwhile, Gorkon is wondering why he keeps getting hung up on. And Rabbit Ear needs... gay sex.
Okay. I didn't know he was gay.
Hey, no problem. Whatever. He'll be fine. What am I going to do about this fucking permissions issue here? I could just unplug it from there and plug it into the desktop. It is formatted as EX3. EX-T3. I end up having to do that. Well. Get to deal with that tomorrow between the fact I'll probably be shoveling all morning.
The worst of it's supposed to come during the daytime.
It's supposed to, yeah, it's supposed to be bad around midday, and then continue into the night.
Can you work from home or no?
Yeah, I can. I didn't bring home anything, but.
It's a little better.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Leslie Hawthorne and Carol Smith. Hopefully, we're in the right meeting.
You're at the right meeting.
I love
this
it.
This is Pat DeVilla, and we got Alan.
I'm Alan.
We're the first ones here.
I'm
so.
A quiet one. You probably won't hear much from me.
We'll start in a couple of minutes, Leslie.
Okay, that's awesome. Can you guys hear us okay? We're on a speakerphone.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, awesome. That makes me happy.
Where'd everybody go?
We're here, and our guests are here.
Who's here? Is Leslie here?
Oh, we've been promoted to guests. That feels good, man.
Are you both in on the same phone together?
Yeah, we're in the same conference room.
Okay.
Where are you guys working at, a Mountain View?
We're in San Francisco today.
Carol actually works most of her days out of the Google San Francisco office, so we figured that it would be a beautiful day in the neighborhood to come up and visit and see the fabulous view of the Bay Bridge from the cafe. So,
and let me tell you, it's fabulous.
And they're all
just rub it in now. You know, we've got like Snowpocalypse 2 coming tonight.
I'm sorry, Apocalypse 2?
No, Snowpocalypse.
See, the apocalypse has come up so many times today in conversation and not even snow related.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel like I might need to find a bomb shelter, man.
Yeah, if you're on Identica or Twitter, you might see some references to Snowpocalypse.
Yeah. I have definitely seen Snowpocalypse.
Yeah, well, this is Snowpocalypse 2, the sequel.
The Untold Snow Story?
Yeah.
You go ahead. I'm sure you have something far more interesting to say than what I was about to blurt out.
I was just going to say it's February. This is like typical weather for us, so.
I am constantly enthralled by the way that folks in California, the minute it begins to rain, lose all ability to drive. Although, frankly, I'm not sure that necessarily everyone had a lot of ability to drive in the first place.
It's not just California people, too. It's those people from down south, too. Like.
True.
Davis, South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, we get a little dust.
So they're all recording podcasts in their cars, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Might be dangerous.
Pat.
Yes.
Just making sure my mic is working.
I can hear you, man.
I guess we should start the show, huh?
It might be time.
Wonder what happened. This is when Joel will come barreling in the middle of everything.
He'll be all cranked up.
Auto, audio.
Far be it from us to, you know, stop any fine traditions of people barreling in the middle.
How do you stop, or you wouldn't want to stop?
No, I would never want to get in the way of tradition. I'm a huge believer in tradition.
There you go. Well, just get ready, because I have a feeling he'll show up. And soon on his heels will be Dave Yates.
Yay!
Connecting and disconnecting.
According to the chat room here, Igor Gorkon can't get on. Gizmo's not working for him tonight.
Well, which means he'll eventually be on and destroy everything. All right, I'm gonna play the intros. What?
Let's do it, man. Get going.
Oh, I'm gonna play the intros. I'm going to patch it through so everybody can hear them. And hopefully there will be no more echo. All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.